Hi, welcome to Big Fat Positive with Shauna and Laura. On this week's episode, we have our weekly check-ins. We have our special segment, OMG, I'm Freaking Out, where we get into the topics of sleep, sand, and savants. And we wrap it up with our weekly BFPs and BFNs. Let's get to it. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 157. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Shauna.
How are you doing? How old is everyone and what's going on over there?
So Sebastian's 17 weeks and Augie is approaching 2.5.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so this week, one thing I wanted to note is, do you remember a couple episodes ago you were talking about how Cece was like saying, Daddy, move, and like, yeah?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. So very eerily, not really all that eerie, because we know that our kids are very close together developmentally and age and personality sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Augie also started Daddy Move this week. Like,
what?
Yeah, he wants Corey to like leave the room sometimes. Like, so it's just us. And yeah.
Oh, no.
And it's also hurting Corey's feelings a bit, you know, because he works so hard taking care of him, especially because I've been sort of on baby duty a lot. And so I think he and Augie have had a really close relationship. But yeah, this last week, he's just like, Daddy, move. Daddy, leave. I want Daddy to go. Daddy, don't sit there. That sort of stuff.
Oh, man. Is it also correlating with a more intense mommy phase?
Yeah. Well, his intense mommy phase, I think, is ongoing, you know, like ever since the baby was born. I think there's some jealousy there that he doesn't even recognize as jealousy, you know. He just knows that he doesn't get as much one-on-one time as he used to, and so he demands it, right?
Mm-hmm.
One thing he's been doing is when I come out with Sebastian in the morning, when I emerge from the bedroom, he goes, Daddy, take Sebastian. Daddy, take baby. And he, like, literally is trying to, like, move the baby into Corey's arms so that I can. Like,
oh,
he's actually trying to do that. Like, he's trying to walk over and pick him up and move him over to Corey.
I visualize how it might look, and it reminds me of how my girls like to try to pick up the dogs and like drag them to another room or outside. Yes. I'm like, don't do that. Don't do that. Like, you're too small and he's big. Like, the proportions are off. And I imagine you don't actually let Augie pick up Sebastian and drag him over to Daddy.
Okay. I do not. We haven't gotten there yet. So, yeah, I just wanted to let you know you're not alone with the Daddy move thing. It's happening at our house, too.
Steve will be happy to hear that.
Yes, yes. Tell Steve it's not personal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there are a couple other things I wanted to talk about this week relating to Sebastian, who is 17 weeks, as I said in the intro. That means he's officially 4 months now.
Okay.
So two things are happening. One is that, you know how I talked about how people are starting to hold him now that like people are getting vaccinated and we're going out into the world again? That, you know, they're getting to hold him and he's the first baby they get to hold, all this stuff. So I have now noticed that when other people hold him, and I'm not just talking about strangers, but I'm talking about like my mom, Corey's mom, Corey, and I take a step away, he starts losing his shit.
Oh, separation anxiety already?
That was like, this is what I have in my notes. Separation anxiety so early? Like, what? Is this even a thing? I was not expecting it. You know, usually you can kind of plop a little baby down with whoever and like they're fine. Mm-hmm. But he is not fine with me walking away now. And so that's posing a bit of a challenge because, you know, sometimes I have to walk away.
Yes.
And I like to alternate bedtime with Corey, you know, like I'll do Sebastian one night and he'll do Augie another night, right? And the nights that it's my turn to do bath with Augie, I can just hear like Sebastian crying, you know, in the other room, and it's hard. And I know it's just, he just wants me, but man, it's frustrating and weird. So I don't know. I'm curious if anyone else has a four-month-old that has separation anxiety, because I was not prepared for this early.
I thought it came around 7 months, 8 months. This is my foggy memory of infancy, but when does it usually kick in?
I don't remember. That sounds about right, too. Like 6, 7 months, somewhere where they kind of realize that you are a separate person from them. Mm-hmm. Like there's a thing that happened, I think, around 6 months where the babies kind of realize like, oh, mommy and I are not the same being. She right. can't walk away. And that's kind of where separation anxiety can begin. But I feel like it was like 9 months was a really bad time for it with mm-hmm. Augie. But yeah, 4 months, that took me by surprise. So
I wonder if it has anything to do with the fact that he's a pandemic baby and just hasn't had a lot of exposure beyond you and your immediate family.
Sure, but that doesn't explain why he cries when Corey's holding him, you know?
Wow, Corey's really in the doghouse this week with your kids.
I know, and he's such a good dad. Poor guy.
So sad.
Maybe Sebastian's picking up on Augie's like daddy move.
Oh, yes. He's already starting that little sibling emulation.
But the other question is whether it's related to this next thing I want to talk about, my final topic for the week, which is the 4 month sleep regression.
Oh, no, not that.
Yeah, it was a belated birthday present for me. From Sebastian.
Aw, how nice of him.
So nice of him. He was sleeping really pretty well. He was like waking up once a night, maybe at like 3 or 4 a.m. Occasionally, he'd just be sleeping from his dream feed at 10:30 all the way to 6:30 or 7. And I'd wake up with my boobs enormous and leaking, but I didn't care because I got a full night's sleep. And I was just like, yay, this is awesome. Two, I swear, overnight, waking up every 1 to 2 hours like a freaking newborn.
No. Oh, my goodness. Did you have to nurse him every time or how did you handle that?
No. So thankfully, I remembered my teachings from my first child in my mommy and me class when they taught us about the 4 month regression, or as they called it, the cognitive leap. And our teacher always said, what you need to do is try to maintain the same routines that you had before. So if I fed him at 3 a.m., you can still feed him at 3 a.m., but try to soothe him in other ways before you resort to that. Because otherwise, you're going to end up with new sleep crutches, right? Like you're introducing more feedings and all this stuff, right? So I did end up feeding him a little bit more than usual, but I have to say I had pretty good success with replacing the pacifier over and over.
Okay. So that's your technique. Okay.
So yeah, I'm not nursing as much, but the thing is, it's not that he's even waking up hungry. I can tell that this is the 4 month regression because he just wants to wake up and like chat. He just wants to talk.
Hi, Mom.
Yeah, he just wants to like practice his voice. And I decided I needed to like record this, right? So that everyone could hear. Okay. So I want you to hear him talking. And this is what's keeping me up at night.
Oh my God, that's so cute.
It's adorable and also just so annoying in the middle of the night. But it is really funny because you're just like, kid, I'm so tired. He's like, And you're like, all right, you're cute. I give up.
But he definitely doesn't sound mad, which is a good thing. It's not like upset crying. So that's great.
Exactly. It's not like screaming, crying, upset. He's just like, I just want to talk.
Oh my God. He loves his little voice. How
cute. He does.
Cute.
I do too. It's really cute. But he actually would get back to sleep. Like he'd go back to sleep if I put the pacifier in or kept my hand on his chest. But I had to keep doing that. So I was like zombie, like, you know, reaching over and putting it back in. And the snoo helped. But I feel like I should show you the snoo log from the night before and the night after.
Okay.
So they maybe don't look all that different, but I'm going to talk you through it.
Okay. These both look kind of bad to me. I see a lot of red.
A lot of red. But do you see the first one I sent you? He slept from midnight all the way till 6:20 a.m., right? There's red in there, but those are just little soothing moments, right? I think I had the settings set too high. And I think the earlier in the evening stuff, I just like nursed him and then was holding him and forgot to put him back in. Like there mm-hmm. might have been inclinations of it, of what was coming. But, you know, he got a good almost like 6.5 hour stretch. Right.
Yeah.
The next day, you can see that it's just like evenly punctuated with reds. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of false starts with getting to bed. Basically, ooh, from 8 to 10, we were struggling to get him to sleep. Then he was back up at 12:40, and then he was up at 2:15, then 3 a.m., then 4 a.m., then he was up out of the snoo till 5, then he was up again at 5:30. Like, it was just,
oh, God.
Yeah, a lot.
That's so painful.
It's so painful. So I think it might be getting a little bit better, but we're just trying to not introduce any more sleep crutches and hope for the best. But yeah, I'm tired. And I don't know why he like decided he turns 4 months and then the next day has to do a sleep regression.
Yeah, I like the idea that it's his choice. He's just been thinking about it since the day he was born. He's like, I think I'm going to aim for the day after I turn 4 months old, really mm-hmm. stick it to my mom after her birthday.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does this get you really motivated to sleep train soon, or what's your thoughts on that in the future?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm going to wait till 5 months at least. I want to wait till we're in the new house, too. So, like,
yeah,
there's some things I want to wait for. Also, like, I'm strangely sentimental this time around and not like rushing to sleep train because mm-hmm. I'm like, he's my last baby and I love having him right next to me when I'm asleep and how sweet it is and all that stuff. Of course, if you like ask me this at 3 a.m. when he's crying and wanting to nurse for the 50 millionth time, I'd probably be like, mm-hmm. when can we get that crib set up? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. So that's a little bit down the line. Well, about a month, I guess. So mm-hmm. we'll see. We'll see.
Okay.
I am eager to get more sleep, though. So I'm sure that will win out in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, that is my week. Shauna, I want to hear about you. How old are your kiddos and what's going on with you this week?
All right. Well, Cece is almost 2.5, just a few days shy.
Just a few days.
Yes. And Ella's still 5, almost 5.5. And the big thing for us this week is I started on the journey to find Cece a preschool.
Ooh.
Oh, this has been on my to-do list for months. I mm-hmm. have been putting it off. I've been making a list of preschools in the area and just keeping them in the notes folder on my phone. And just like anytime I'm in one of my neighborhood moms groups and someone's like, what are the good preschools to go to? Because people ask that constantly. Yeah. Everyone chimes in. And so I have a really good sense of like what the popular ones are and what other ones are. So I just have this list of like 15. And this week I was like, okay, I can't waste any more time. I want to start her in preschool in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm running out of time. I've got to start calling. So I called around and contacted about 15 preschools.
Whoa.
This week.
That's a lot.
Yeah, because I was hitting dead ends at every turn.
No, really?
Yeah, I have some friends up here who love this one particular preschool. Their kids went there. And I was like, okay, that sounds wonderful. And so I called and it's just like, just an answering machine. Basically, it's like, we are completely booked up. Like, go online and fill out a form and join the wait list. So I was hitting dead ends, like no more space. You know, I had to join a lot of wait lists. One, I left a message and they told me the director would call me back and just they never, ever did. Mm-hmm. Just radio silence. One I called sounded really cool. It's like an outdoor Spanish immersion preschool.
Whoa.
I talked to the director for a while and she's like, okay, you have to come to a 2.5 hour tour with a bunch of other parents on a Saturday and you cannot bring children. And your husband has to come too. No one can be accepted to this preschool unless both parents have done this 2.5 hour tour. I'm just like,
where are the kids supposed to go? Like, seriously, where are the kids supposed to go? I don't understand.
I didn't understand either. It was just one of those things where I was like, okay, great. Go ahead and put me on the list. And I hung up. I was like, that's never going to happen. What?
That makes me question, like, how much they actually know about the needs of families, because it's like, that is outrageous.
Yes. Yes.
The only people who can do that are people who can afford private babysitters or have family nearby. Mm-hmm. Like, this is wild to me. It blows me away.
Right. And I'm also just like, why do we need to be there for 2.5 hours? Like, I get the gist of a preschool and what it's about. And like, you know, like within 15 minutes, mm-hmm. I think. So they're very particular.
Yeah. Can you imagine? There must be so many people who show up 5 minutes in, they're like, oh, this is not for us. And then it's like, well, shit.
Yeah.
I'm stuck here. I'm going to look like a jerk if I leave.
Oh, my goodness.
I paid for a babysitter for 2.5 hours.
Oh, it's like, ditch that place and go have lunch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I hit a lot of dead ends. I have a couple of possibilities. One of them is a preschool nearby that I've heard of, and it's a co-op. Are you familiar with preschool co-ops at all?
I am. I've looked into it. There's actually one on our street, like literally at the end of the block, and everyone loves it. It's one of those ones that always shows up in the mom group discussions. Mm-hmm. But I realize, like, I'm moving. So I'm not about
right.
to, like, I think that would suck so bad to have to go to a co-op that's like on your old street and you have to drive so far to get to it. So, yes. But for our listeners who've never heard of co-ops, do you want to explain how they work? Because I kind of know how they work, but I have to say I don't know all the ins and outs.
Yeah. What I gather about this school is that there is a teacher. There's a lead teacher, but it's a nonprofit organization, and the entire school basically runs on parental involvement. So, like, if you sign up for this school, you pay a low monthly fee, like significantly lower than other regular preschools, mm-hmm. but you have to commit. One of the parents has to volunteer in the classroom once a week. So it runs with the teacher, but then the support is all parents. So there's like 5 parents there every day. Mm. And you just kind of help the school run. You could volunteer also to be like the new member coordinator or whatever other, like treasurer or whatever other auxiliary roles they have. So it's a big community feel, a lot of parental involvement, and it sounds really neat, but I'm hesitant because we both have full-time jobs.
Yeah.
So what am I going to do? I don't know.
Yeah, that was my follow-up question, is like, how do you make it work if you also work, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. The thing about this one is it's just part-time. It's 4 hours a day. So mm-hmm. the shift would be 4 hours. And, you know, I don't know. I haven't toured it yet. I don't know if I'm going to. But I kind of like the idea of getting her into something part-time just because she's been at home this whole time and, like, mm-hmm. you know, spent the last year and a half of her life in quarantine, basically. And I want to ease her into school. I don't think I want to put her in something full time. And the parental involvement would be nice, you know, a nice transition to get her into school. And so I don't know. It's all up in the air, but I'm on the mission.
Well, you definitely need to keep us posted because it's such a big deal. Like, mm-hmm. wow. Anyway, it is overwhelming. And I really look forward to hearing, you know, how these pan out and which one you pick.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you even get to go tour any of them.
Fingers crossed. I hope there's any space left in any of them because I really want her to have the preschool experience starting in the fall. Really do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's pretty much all for us this week. Should we move on to our special segment?
Oh, yeah. I think we do. I think it's going to be a good one.
All right. Laura, we recently had our moms on the show, and it was so fun hearing their stories from the past.
I loved hearing what they had to share about their experiences being pregnant and having young kids, but you know they have so many more amazing memories and stories to share.
Yes, and that's why StoryWorth is such a wonderful gift for the mother figure in your life. It's a way to capture those stories and memories for years to come.
And what better time to give StoryWorth than for Mother's Day, which is right around the corner. Right now, our listeners can save $10 off your first purchase by going to StoryWorth.com/BFP.
Here's how it works. Each week, StoryWorth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick, such as, what is your favorite memory of your parents?
All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter.
You'll be emailed a copy of your loved one's response as they're submitted over the course of the year. You'll get to enjoy their retelling of the stories you already know or be surprised by stories you've never heard before.
After that year of fun, StoryWorth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come.
I gifted StoryWorth to my mom a couple years ago, and her hardcover book is a special memento on my bookshelf that my girls and I love to look through.
My mom did one too and included lots of pictures from her childhood, which Sebastian and Augie love looking at.
Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. StoryWorth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/BFP.
That's storyworth.com/BFP to save $10 on your first purchase. There's nothing like the feeling of being confident in your own skin. No complicated routine, no multiple step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions.
Absolutely. That's why we have to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best.
The secret to OneSkin's success is their proprietary OS1 peptide, which switches off the aging cells and has been clinically proven to strengthen the skin barrier and improve skin health markers.
For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off OneSkin products using the code BFP when you check out at OneSkin.co.
One of my favorite things about OneSkin products is how easy they are to use. I swear, I've seen skin routines with like 20 steps, but not OneSkin. Just cleanse, pat your skin dry, and apply twice daily.
We aren't the only ones who love OneSkin. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews, and were recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands in 2024.
OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer.
My skin tends to get really irritated this time of year, but since using the OneSkin face supplement every day, my skin feels calm and healthy. I've also been using the eye topical supplement, which I really feel brightens up my face.
Get started today with 15% off using code BFP at oneskin.co.
That's 15% off oneskin.co with code BFP. After your purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
Okay, I will be the first to admit that I don't always prioritize my own wellness. With kids and work, it never feels easy to fit in taking care of myself. But with Allo Moves, I find it easier than ever to do so.
Same. With the Allo Moves app, everything I need is in one place. Yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, mindfulness, and so much more.
If you're curious what Allo Moves has to offer, visit allomoves.com and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and 20% off an annual membership.
I love that I can easily find a class that's perfectly suited to my interests and ability level. They offer classes from beginner to advanced, and all classes are on demand, so you can fit them into your busy schedule.
They have high-intensity classes if you're looking to get in a good sweat, and low-key mindfulness classes if you're looking to get centered. They even offer help with sleep, which we all know is crucial for moms.
Ever since I watched The Art of Sleep on Allo Moves, I've been falling asleep faster and staying asleep longer.
One thing I really like about Allo Moves is that they create themed playlists, so it's easy to find content on the areas you're interested in. One of my favorite playlists right now is called Meditation for Productivity.
Ooh, I love the sound of that one. Unlock your personal wellness routine with Allo Moves. Go to allomoves.com now and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership.
That's allomoves.com, code BFP. allomoves.com, code BFP. And we are back, so our special segment this week is OMG, I am freaking out, which is our regular segment where we get to unload all the things that are freaking us out at this very moment, parenting related, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to hear what you're freaking out about related to parenting this week.
This week, I am freaking out about sand.
Okay, so I'm laughing because there was recently a heated discussion about this in my alumni moms group about sand. So I think I may understand where you're coming from. But I'm also laughing because you happen to have a fucking gigantic sandbox in your backyard.
It's huge. Let's remind everyone that it has a literal ton of sand.
A literal ton.
2,500 pounds of sand that I carried back there with my own arms and hands. Let's not forget that detail. And everyone knows I'm not actually a big fan of sand, but this this freak out doesn't have anything to do with the annoying aspect of sand.
Okay.
What it has to do with, and maybe this is in the zeitgeist right now because I think, because I came across it in a mom's group too, apparently like there's safe and unsafe sand that I was not aware of when I carried 2,500 pounds of sand into my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Someone posted a post like, I'm getting a sandbox in my backyard. Is it worth it for me to get this particular type of play sand? And it's a bag of sand that's about $35 for 20 pounds of sand. Okay.
Oof. Well, I can do the math on that, although maybe you've already done it for me.
Oh, I have. If I filled my giant sandbox with this special sand, it would cost $4,375.
Oh, my God.
Okay, and let's remember, I got this sandbox for free from someone in the neighborhood who, like, was moving and just needed someone to come and take their sandbox away.
I'll argue that it wasn't free and that it took you two full days of labor.
Oh, God. Yes. Yes.
But yes, the materials were free provided to you.
Yes. Point being, someone was willing to give it away for free. Mm-hmm. So I don't imagine this person spent almost $5,000 on sand only to just give it to some random stranger for free. So I think this person probably filled their sandbox with regular old sand from Home Depot, which is $3 a bag for 50 pounds. So that means you could fill that entire sandbox for $150. So I think that's what I'm working with here.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a safe assumption. I feel like they would have told you, oh, and by the way, this is the most premium organic play sand. They would have told you that. Right?
Exactly. From the Bahamas. I should mention this it's called Baja Play Sand because it's literally imported from the Bahamas.
There's some beach in the Bahamas that's like bare now. It just rocks.
God, that's really depressing. That's really sad.
Sorry.
Another thing to freak out about. Jeez Louise. Okay, so anyway, here's the deal with sand. Regular sand, like this Home Depot bag, is made by grinding up quartz crystal, otherwise known as silica. Like you grind it up and that makes the sand. And what it also makes is a lot of dust. And apparently silica dust is horrible for your lungs. So the kids are out there playing in the sand, and I've seen it, right? When the sand is dry, they're playing in it, and like it's just wafting these big clouds of dust. And before it was just annoying to me. I'm like, oh, get out of the way. I need to get out of the way of this dust. It's going to get my skin dusty. And now I'm like, we all need to get out of the way of this dust. We're going to inhale it. Our lungs are going to turn black. I mean, apparently it causes lung disease or something.
Wow.
So I don't know what to do because I can't buy $4,300 worth of silica-free Bahama sand. I don't want them to get lung disease. What do I do?
Could you like wet it down before they play with it so it's not dusty?
That's not a bad idea because I think that it's mostly the dust that's harmful. Like actually touching it isn't harmful to skin or anything like that. So maybe I just have to be more vigilant about making sure it's not super dry and dusty.
That was my first thought, because otherwise you're going to have to pay someone to haul that away.
I know
you're not going to like hoist it upon some other unsuspecting mom.
Like, right.
This sand is not safe for my kids, but you take it.
Yeah. Yeah. You go take it. I won't say anything.
But also it's like, what kind of sand do they use at the parks?
I think they use the silica sand, don't you think?
The city, you know, Parks and Recreation isn't buying $20 a bag sand.
Yes.
Oh,
$34 a bag.
Well, I have to say, I don't have an answer for this because I saw the discussion and I was like, I don't have a sand pit. It's not a big deal. But yeah, that is distressing. You know what? It just goes to show. It's like everything's going to kill you. You know, it just can't win.
I know.
You just can't win.
You really feel that way a lot as a mom, too. I mean, I felt that way before having kids, but now it's just like really in my life, I'm now like stressing out about sand. I never thought that I would be here in my life.
10 years ago, one of your big worries, Shauna, 10 years in the future is going to be sand. Okay.
10 years ago, my biggest worry was that Chili, my dog, got up on the table, ate an entire box of Belgian chocolates, and had to go have his stomach pumped at the vet.
Oh, Chili.
Yeah.
Oh, Chili.
And here we are. So this is unresolved. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I am a little bit freaked out about it right now.
Listeners, please write in. Tell us about it. Tell us what you know. We need to know.
Please. We need to know. All right, Laura, what are you freaking out about this week?
Okay, so I am freaking out about the fact that I'm worried Augie is just dropping his nap altogether.
Oh, that's terrifying. I could see why you would be freaking out about that.
I'm valiantly trying to maintain this nap, right? Like, I've talked about it a ton on the show. Everyone's probably sick of hearing about Augie's naps, but I am, like, dedicated to making sure he gets his rest. However, we're kind of at the point where, like, I want to say 5 days out of the week, he doesn't nap.
Mm-hmm.
And then days, there are these weird days where he, like, takes forever to nap and then he falls asleep at, like, 3, like, right when I'm about to go get him from quiet time. And then I don't know when to wake him up and everything's screwed up. And I have turned to the internet for help, of course, and looked at all these previous conversations in my mom's groups and then, like, asked questions. And there's always the person who comes in and says, well, my kid just flat out stopped napping at 2.5. Like, there was nothing I could do. I tried and tried. He just wasn't going to ever nap again. So we moved to quiet time or whatever it was, right? Meanwhile, I have my mom in my ear being like, maybe he's just giving up his nap. Maybe he's giving up his nap, which, by the way, she's been saying since he was like 14 months old or something.
Yeah, she's been saying that for a long time.
She has. She is an expert about genetic mutations and taking care of sick children. She's not an expert at child sleep. So I remind her that occasionally. But yeah. And then there's, like, there's just a lot of evidence that it seems like he's dropping his nap. And I don't know what I'm going to do, Sean. I don't know what I'm going to do.
So what is the biggest fear about it? That you are just going to have to continue to entertain him during that time instead of having you time?
Yes. And to be fair, it's not all selfish. I'd say it's like 80% selfish, 20%. Like, he's kind of a wreck on the days he doesn't nap. So I think he physiologically still needs it. Mentally, I don't know if he does. And, like, he doesn't want to do it. You know, it's becoming harder and harder to put him down. There's lots of wrestling and fighting. But then there's some days where he just passes out. It's so weird. I don't know. I just don't know. I just don't get it.
Yeah, it's like the sleep deprivation builds up and then he just crashes.
So how did Elle end up, like, dropping her nap in the end? Like, how old was she? What happened?
Well, you're going to hate me. She dropped it when she was 4.
Well, no, I don't hate you. That's wonderful. I'm so happy for you.
But here's the thing. I think she would have been ready earlier, but she was going to preschool every single day and they were pretty insistent on nap time. Like, all the kids, you know, nap. And it was completely screwing up bedtime at night. She would nap in the middle of the day at school for like 2 hours and then come home and stay awake until 10 p.m. And I was going crazy. I was like, stop it. Stop letting her nap so long because this is not good. So once pandemic hit and she was home, she did not want to nap. She just didn't need to anymore. So she stopped it and her nighttime sleep adjusted. She goes to bed now around 7:30 and sleeps till like 6:30. So she now gets enough sleep at night instead of like a shorter night sleep, you know, and then doing it during the day. And so I think that happens with a lot of kids when they really just drop the nap, they kind of adjust the nighttime sleep. So I'm wondering if that might end up happening with him. And so he won't end up feeling so wrecked and sleep deprived.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, he's getting like 11 hours of sleep, I want to say, at night. So it's kind of like 7:30 to 8, you know, 7:30 or 8 for bedtime. We want it earlier, but it's so hard, especially with the baby. And then he wakes up between 6:30 and 7 usually most days. So which seems normal. I mean, I guess maybe, sure, if that's the silver lining I can look forward to, like him sleeping more at night, maybe that'll help me feel less freaked out about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, I know that it's a transition we're going to have to go through eventually, but I'm not ready.
Yeah. Well, the obvious solution is just put him in a full-time preschool and then let them deal with it.
I mean, honestly, that kind of is my next plan of attack because I've heard that preschools are like magic at getting kids to nap. So,
oh, they are. They're wizards. They know how to do it. And it's the peer pressure. All the other kids are napping. I was always shocked how much Elle napped at school. On the floor, on a mat, like they,
right?
Bright sunlight. Her preschool had floor to ceiling windows. pure sunlight. And she's just like for 2 hours.
Meanwhile, we're like the exact white noise on loop and he has the perfect sleep sack. The temperature has to be regular just right. He has to have the exact two songs we sing him. And yeah. And
blackout curtains.
Blackout curtains, yeah, with no peeking light. Okay. Well, I think that might be a good plan. Plus, you know, I'm looking forward to him getting into school too. So
yeah,
we shall see.
Okay.
So do you have another OMG I'm freaking out for us?
Okay. I have been freaking out lately that I have missed the window of opportunity to get my kids involved in either a sport or music or arts or something to develop their prodigious nature, to become prodigies, if you will, in something. You know what I mean? I feel like when you see Olympic gymnasts, it's like, I've been doing that since I was 2 years old. Or musicians, like I started singing when I was three. And my kid has been at home, at most, like bouncing on a cheap bounce house that I blow up in my living room. Like that's the level of athleticism we've got going on here. They sing into a karaoke microphone, pretty off key. I haven't put them in anything and trained them in anything yet. And I'm like, have I missed this window of opportunity? And are they screwed? Are they going to join classes later and everyone's going to be ahead of them? I'm just spiraling on this whole thing. I need to talk it out.
Okay. So you think that there was a chance that your children might have some kind of like prodigy level skill, but you don't know about it because you just haven't gotten them into the right class yet. And
yes,
as such, you've missed the window for either Olympic gold or like getting an EGOT someday.
Yes.
I see.
Yeah. Especially Elle. You know, she's five and a half now, and
yeah, I feel like at 2.5, Cece still has a little time, and she's not quite past her prime yet.
Well, there are classes, soccer classes, that two-year-olds are in. So if I get her in a soccer class when she's three, is she going to be behind everyone else? I mean, I know this sounds like kind of ridiculous, but I'm also like, I don't know. I don't want them to be insecure when they finally do join extracurricular activities because everyone else has like already been doing it since they were born, basically.
So I get this freak out. I think I'm going to play a little armchair psychologist here and say that this might stem from the fact that you and I were both raised in an era of like where trophies were very desirable and where we were also like overachievers. Mm-hmm. I was an overachiever, so were you, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that might be why you like think this might be a valuable thing, right? Because we think that it's a good thing to have these like prodigious talents. I'm going to be that person who says it's not. Mm-hmm. And it's fine if your kids are average or not as good. Because,
yeah,
I mean, are people happy who have to spend their entire childhoods training for the Olympics, you know?
Are you
don't want your kid to grow up to like be one of those former child stars who doesn't know how to like behave in the world, right? Like I think that there's definitely a flip side to genius and to being really, really good at things. Even like if we're not talking like Olympic level, just like being really good at something puts a lot of expectations on kids that I think maybe aren't necessary. So I want to flip it on its head and say that you are being a good parent by not overscheduling your kids and trying to make them be high achievers in things they may not have interest in. And instead, you're letting them do what they want to do. And they'll get to soccer class. I'm telling you, I have friends in like two-year-old soccer class and it's just for cuteness. Like it's... They're not learning how to like score. I don't know anything about soccer except for watching Ted Lasso. So like, I don't know. They score a goal from the corner. Is that a
sure?
Thing? Yeah. Okay. No, they're just running around kicking balls, and the parents are all taking pictures because it's freaking adorable.
Yeah.
And but you know what? I have wondered about this. I haven't freaked out about it, but I have wondered about it and had similar thoughts because I think about like Beyonce and how they're like, oh, at three, she was such a good singer. And it's like, do you know? You know what I mean? Like you have to know when you have a kid like that, right? They must be so far beyond what all the other kids are doing or something. You know what I mean? Like it must be so obvious. So I also feel like if your kids had some kind of natural innate ability that was going to make them the top of their field in performing arts or athletics, you might have noticed already. You know what I mean?
Okay. So you're saying they're not talented.
I'm saying they are talented enough and right, they don't right, need right. to be, you know, Olympians. But right, like right. I listened to that Raising to Rise podcast that we were promoting for a little bit. When I listened to it, they interviewed the mother of the guy who did like the free solo climb up El Capitan in Yosemite, that, and they made the documentary Free Solo about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she talked about how like from a very young age, it was just clear that he was just like super, super talented at climbing. Like they could not keep him off of boulders and trees and stuff. Like she didn't put him into rock climbing class, you know?
Right.
Like, it just, he just was. So. Yeah.
Okay.
Not to dismiss your concerns. I just think that you shouldn't have to worry because they will be just fine.
I'm not actually aiming for like Olympic level achievement. I'm definitely not that level of intense parent. And I do think that, you know, pushing a child into an activity before they're ready to choose if they really like it, you know, and making them commit to it can be a recipe for disappointment and unhappiness and stuff. But I think about myself, if I'm playing armchair psychologist on myself, it's like, I always wish I had a higher level of mastery of certain skills, you know, like I wish I were a better singer or a better actor when I was doing acting. Like, what could my life have been like if I had started those things when I was younger and developed those skills and confidence then? Like, you know, I started those things later in life and maybe I would have had just a different, I don't know. I don't even know what I'm trying to say. I guess I just have this fear like, oh, they're going to be just as ordinary as me. And then like sad that I didn't help them, you know, get more talented or something. I don't know. It's a weird mental game to play.
Well, I think it's not too late to start. Obviously, your kids are not that old. And this also might be residual guilt about the pandemic, too. Because you just haven't been able to do anything in the last year. Like, it was an extraordinary and weird year. I guarantee if we hadn't had the pandemic, you would have had, you know, Cece in adorable little baby soccer class or something, or taking her to my gym, and you could have been putting Elle into a choir or something. So, you know, a lot of this was out of your hands, and you did the best you could.
That's true. As far as like very intense interests and talents, I think Elle has actually shown that for swimming ever since she was really young, like loved water, loved swimming. You know, swimming class was awesome and stuff. And we would go to the pool at the YMCA all the time, and then everything shut down. And it's almost like that interest just got cut off completely because you can't really just go to swimming pools when everything's shut down and we don't have a pool. So, yeah, I do feel sad about that. And, I do think that plays a role in the fear I've been feeling.
Yeah, definitely. So I hope you give yourself some grace on this one.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I will. Thank you. All right, do you have another one for us?
I do, and it involves a fun story, but I think we should take a break and come back with it. What do you think?
Ooh, okay. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Shauna, think of all the relationships you have in your life. From parents, siblings, your friends, kids, coworkers, even neighbors, there's a lot of human interaction, which we know doesn't always go perfectly.
Oh, you know I don't have a perfect relationship with my next door neighbor, and I can't change her, but I can work on my own reactions to her and how she treats my family.
Absolutely. Strengthening your own coping skills and setting healthy boundaries in any relationship are important, and therapy can be a great place to work on these types of things.
Not only that, therapy can help you handle stress, deal with burnout, and empower you to be the best version of yourself. Not only that, therapy can help you handle stress, deal with burnout, and empower you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma, although, of course, it is helpful in those situations, too.
I've noticed that doing weekly therapy helps me handle the things that cause overwhelm in my life, like constantly balancing kids, work, and self-care.
I love that therapy helps me have insights about myself that I might not have otherwise. It's always great to get an objective take on what I'm going through.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit BetterHelp.com/BFP today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/BFP. Hey, listeners. This episode is proudly brought to you by LolaVie, an award-winning hair care line founded by the fabulous Jennifer Aniston. You know, hair so iconic, it needs no introduction.
Okay, imagine this. Jen got tired of the same old struggle we all face, choosing between hair products that work and ones that are actually good for us. With LolaVie, that dilemma is history.
We all put our hair through the wringer. Coloring, heat styling, stress, the list goes on. Over time, it takes a toll. That's why it's crucial to have products that not only repair the look of the damage, but also shield your locks from future harm.
Enter LolaVie's best sellers, the cult classic Glossing Detangler and Perfecting Leave-In Conditioner. These aren't just styling products, they're your hair's new best friends.
And here's a treat for you listeners. For a limited time, you get an exclusive 15% off your entire order at LolaVie.com. Just use code BFP at checkout. I have been using the Glossing Detangler and Leave-In Conditioner, and I love them. I love how soft and healthy my hair feels after using them.
I love their restorative shampoo and conditioner plus intensive repair treatment. They smell so good, make my shower feel like a spa, and never leave my hair looking or feeling dry.
LolaVie's products are naturally derived in plant-based goodness. No silicone, sulfates, parabens, or gluten, and of course, cruelty-free and vegan.
Unlock Jennifer Aniston-approved hair at LolaVie.com. As our loyal listeners, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your entire order when you use code BFP at checkout.
That's 15% off your order at LolaVie.com with promo code BFP. Please note, you can only use one promo code per order and discounts can't be combined.
After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you.
All right, we're back. Laura, you have another OMG I'm freaking out, and you said it involves a story. Now, I am super curious. What do you got for us?
Yeah, so I'm not actually going to open with what I am freaking out about because I got to tell you the story first, and
okay.
You'll figure it out. Okay. So the other day, I had set up a play date with a family that lived in our new neighborhood. I had joined a new mom's group, and I was looking forward to meeting some people in the area, yada, yada, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I was doing this in anticipation of the move so that we have some neighborhood friends. By the time we get there, I thought I was being such a proactive mom about this, right? So I got a direct message from a mom. Let's just call her Melissa. Melissa said, she and her daughter Penelope were going to be at this one park that's in the new neighborhood. And if we wanted to come by, we could meet them and hang out and check out a new park, right? I thought this was a great idea. So
fun.
So that afternoon, so I tell Augie, he's sitting down having a snack. And I'm once we finish your snack, we're actually going to go to a new park and we're going to meet a little girl named Penelope who you get to play with. And he was like, will she have toys? Which is his first question for everything. And I was like, she might. She might have toys. And her mommy's going to be there. Her mommy's name is Melissa. And he was like, will she have toys? And I was like, probably. And then he said, her daddy be there? And I said, I don't think so. I'm not sure if her daddy's going to be there. And he goes, what's her daddy called? And I said, honey, I don't actually know what her daddy's name is. I don't even know these people. We're meeting them for the first time. And he goes, he scrunches his face up and he goes, oh, it's Chris.
Hmm?
And I just thought that was the cutest, funniest thing, right? Because I was like, you're so certain about it. It's so cute. He's like, oh, it's Chris. And so I laughed and I was like, okay, it's Chris. And I told Corey, I was like, Corey, Augie just, I told him the whole story and it was and Augie said, oh, it's Chris. And Corey's like, okay. And we thought it was kind of funny, especially because as we've mentioned on the show, all of our guy friends are named Steve. So he automatically thinks men are named Steve, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And Chris, we thought just kind of came out of nowhere. We thought it was really cute because we don't really know any other people named Chris. My stepbrother is named Chris, but we haven't seen him in over a year either. So, and we hadn't talked about him recently. I just didn't think it was I just thought it was funny, right? Okay, whatever. So we get to the park, we're playing, I'm talking to this mom, getting the lowdown on the neighborhood, and Augie's playing really nicely with Penelope, and they're just having a cute time in the sandbox, probably in the silica sand or whatever, ruining
yes.
their lungs, but whatever. And so we were there for 2 hours just chatting. And then eventually Melissa's like, I have to get going, but we should totally do this again if you guys ever want to come over to our house. My husband would love to meet you guys. And I was like, Oh, yeah, for sure. Hey, what's your husband's name, by the way? Because she had just been referring to him. My husband. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, it's Chris.
No. What?
I was like, what? I could not speak for like 30 seconds. And then Corey came over and he's like, what's going on? I was like, her husband's name is Chris. And Corey was like, wait, what? And we both like look at Augie and we look at each other. And like, I told Melissa about this and she did not seem super amused by it. It actually looked like it freaked her out.
Really?
And I've never heard from her again, Shauna. I've never heard from her again.
No way. What?
Can you believe that?
Whoa.
So I'm freaking out that my son is psychic, Shauna.
We have to test him on some other situations.
How do you test it?
Well, for starters, we need to see if he knows other people's husbands' names.
This is like all he's psychic about is like other daddy's names.
That would be so specific and weird.
That would be a really very specific skill set.
Yes.
For a psychic.
Well, if he is psychic, you guys could have a nice lucrative side income. You know, people pay big bucks, especially in LA, for psychic readings. Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's too late? Like, have I missed my opportunity to get him into psychic classes?
He'll never be Olympic level psychic. You've missed the boat, Laura.
But anyway, we'll see. I'll keep you posted if any other weird things happen.
Yes, I'm dying to know. Very fascinating. Oh, my goodness.
Well, that's it for me. Should we move on to our BFPs and our BFNs?
Yeah, let's do it. All right. It is time for our weekly BFPs or BFNs. Laura, what do you have for us this week?
I have a BFP.
Oh, good. Okay. What is it?
It's sort of a multi-platform BFP. What it really is a BFP about this woman. Her name is Casey Davis. She's a licensed professional counselor. And on Instagram, she's at Struggle Care. But on TikTok, she's Domestic Blisters, which I think is a very clever name. Mm-hmm. And she actually does a lot more on TikTok. But she wrote a little book called How to Keep House While Drowning. And it's subtitled 31 Days of Compassionate Help. Uh-huh. And it's a book that's really focused towards people who are caregivers, especially moms, trying to help us figure out how to do all of our like care tasks that we need to do, like taking care of kids and taking care of the house and cleaning and laundry and blah, 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 while also taking care of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been just really learning a lot from her TikTok mostly, but also I read her book and it's a really short book. So it's really easy to read. It's like 55 pages long and it's got a lot of really useful, actionable stuff you can get from it. So I think I got the Kindle version for just a couple bucks. But if you follow her on TikTok at Domestic Blisters, it's just like all of her TikToks are like super useful and very like to the point about like real things you can do to make your life better.
Like what? Like what? I'm dying to know.
It all kind of goes back to her basic ideas, which are, she has this thing called the 6 pillars of self-care.
Mm-hmm.
And here they are. Okay, I'm going to read them to you. One is, you can't save the rainforest if you're depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Shame is the enemy of functioning.
Mm-hmm.
You deserve kindness regardless of you functioning. So even if you're not doing well, you deserve kindness. Another one is, rest is a right, not a reward, which
Ooh.
Is very hard for me to understand. Like,
Same.
I always feel like I have to earn my rest.
Uh-huh.
Good enough is perfect is one of them.
Okay.
And then her final one is the one I want to talk about most, which is, care tasks are morally neutral. And this is one that's like the hardest for me to really wrap my brain around. But once I internalized it, it really kind of changed the way I went about my days. And I realized that we put a lot of moral value on whether we keep a clean house, right? Like, if your dishes are dirty, does that make you, like, it makes you feel like you might be a bad person or something. I don't know. And maybe I can't be the only one, because she obviously wrote a book about this and people mm-hmm. like react well to it. Or like, if you have a messy house, does that make you a bad person? Does that make you a bad mother? Mm-hmm. That sort of thing.
Okay.
And her premise that care tasks are morally neutral, they're not good or bad, they're just there to serve a function so that you can have a functional lifestyle, has really made me rethink how I get things done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it actually kind of reminds me, I remember we talked a while back off the pod. We actually do that sometimes,
uh-huh.
talk off the pod, about how you've stopped folding your laundry. right?
Oh, yeah. Especially the kids' laundry. Mm-hmm. Just gets thrown just right in their drawers.
Sort and throw in the drawers, yes. Right? Mm-hmm. And that is a functional choice, right? You're doing okay. that because what you need is to be able to find a shirt. It doesn't matter if it's folded. Mm-hmm. And what you've done is you've just like liberated time for yourself, right?
Oh.
And there's no moral judgment on it, right? You just do what you need to do to have a functional home. So
mm-hmm.
I'm not doing a great job explaining it. I just think everyone needs to go. If you're on Instagram, Struggle Care. If you're on TikTok, Domestic Blisters, or get her book, How to Keep House While Drowning. It was just like big light bulbs all over the place when I was reading it. And I think our listeners will really, really benefit from it if they haven't already been following her.
Okay, so I have a question then.
Uh-huh.
After being exposed to these ideas and learning from her, are you still doing spa rolls with each individual burp cloth, washcloth, etc., what you were doing before? Or has that changed the way you think about that?
I am not. And here's why. Because it was taking too much time. But also, I'm not, because I do not have the time for it right now. But also, I'm not judging myself for having done it, because I realized it was kind of like a creative release for me.
Mm-hmm.
As silly as that sounds, like, I was really enjoying the feeling of having control
mm-hmm.
over my burp cloths. But yeah, no, now I'm like, okay, I still roll them. I just don't spa roll them. But that's because it's easier to pull one out when they're rolled. And it's also been a thing where I tell Corey, because Corey would be like, I don't know how you fold these. Do you want me? And I'm like, it's not about the folding. Like, just do it your way. It's fine. Like, thank you mm-hmm. for helping me, basically.
Okay.
But, you know, it actually has... It's kind of had a different effect from you. You know, you don't fold the kids' clothes anymore. You just throw them in a drawer. And I considered doing that. But I actually realized that for me, functional meant I did want my kids' clothes folded, even though it was taking a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've discovered that when it's like things are in the laundry basket or just sorted into piles, I don't find the clothes I need. You know what I mean? Like, it's harder for me. It takes me more time mm-hmm. to find what I need. So for me, folding makes my house more functional. For you, not folding makes your house more functional. And both of those are valid, and there's no moral good or bad. But yeah, anyway, that's what I'm into these days.
Cool.
I love my self-help TikTok. It's awesome.
Awesome. I'm definitely going to have to check that out. I could definitely use some moral relief from some of the stuff that I've got going on in this messy old house of mine.
Yes. And rest is a right.
Yes. That's a good one to remember. Oh,
yeah.
Indeed.
So, yeah, that's my BFP. Shauna, do you have a BFP or a BFN for us?
I also have a BFP.
Oh, yay.
It is life-changing too, but not in the same way.
Okay.
It's a kitchen tool that I never knew existed and never knew I needed until I had kids. So I am very excited to say that I have purchased my very first cherry pitter.
Ooh, very exciting.
I feel like this is something you knew about and probably have.
I don't have one. I know about it. But you know why I don't have one? Because we're not a big cherry family.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Really?
I don't know what to say.
Yeah. Okay. Well, cherries are one of my favorite fruits. I love them. Summertime is like cherry season. That's when they come out in the stores. So I've been buying them, and I get really nervous giving them to the kids, especially Cece, mm-hmm. of course, you know, 2.5. Like, first of all, they're round and chokeable, and then they've got mm-hmm. the pit in the middle. And I shit you not, for like 2 years, I was taking a paring knife and cutting it like an apple, like slicing off one side, slicing off the other, like doing this to like 20 cherries, right? And then serving them to the kids. And when someone posted this item in my mom's group recently, I was like, what? Oh my God, I could save so much time. And like, the old way is ridiculous. And it's so easy and cool. You just like stick the cherry in and like squeeze the thing, and it goes pop, and the pit pops right out, and it's like softer. It's no longer like this hard globe that they can choke on as easily. And I just love it. So I'm highly suggesting people who like cherries get a cherry pitter today.
It reminds me of my love of my grape cutter. It's such a unitasker, but I love the grape cutter. It just makes life so much easier. Like, we still cut our grapes because Augie, he just shoves food in his mouth and
mm-hmm.
forgets to chew sometimes. So
yeah.
We're a grape cutting family.
Yeah, we still cut Cece's grapes too. I only cut them in half and like maybe eight at a time. I don't know. It just feels less intense and detail oriented than what I was doing with the cherries. You know, like just cutting four sides off of a tiny cherry just seems so crazy.
Yes, yeah.
And there was a lot to waste, you know.
And now you can make cherry pie.
I could. I've never made a pie.
Wait, what? You've never made a pie?
Never, ever in my life.
I'm speechless.
You are. Yeah.
You love baking.
I like baking cakes. And mostly what I like is decorating. I like the artistic aspect of it, which is why I love cakes. To me, pies don't have that element to it. And to be honest with you, again, I don't really like pie that much. Like, I like it, but I don't love it. I will never choose pie if other things are available.
Wow. Wow. It's like I don't even know you.
I know. After all these years, Laura, you just learned something new about me.
I mean, it just goes to show you never know someone through and through. They can always surprise you.
Yeah. Well, it's like if the topic doesn't come up, like I don't walk around with a banner like I hate pie or anything like that.
I have a vague memory of you telling me you were like skeptical of my pumpkin pie and me being like, but I have the best pumpkin pie ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that ever got resolved, but
I don't know if I actually ate your pumpkin pie. Did I?
I don't know. We're going to have to resolve that. I'm going to be that person who makes you try like one bite like you're a toddler. Like, just take a bite.
You got to try new foods because they might taste good. That's Daniel Tiger's jingle.
I was going to say, that's got to be Daniel Tiger.
It is. Now, listen, I will eat pie. It's not like I gag on it or anything, but of the pies, pumpkin pie is definitely my least favorite. Like, I do not care for it at all. It has to be completely doused in like whipped cream.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I take it as a personal challenge then.
All right. Well, all right. We'll have to video it and Instagram it for our listeners. They are dying to see this content.
Yes, this is definitely this is the content they didn't know they needed.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Anyway, all right, listeners, if you have any other content you want us to share, reach out. If you have any OMGs, I'm freaking out. We want to hear them. Laura, where can everyone reach us?
We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at BFB Podcast. We have a website, bigfatpositivepodcast.com. If you want to send us an email, you can always include a voice memo to that email. Just send it to contact@bigfatpositivepodcast.com. And if you want to join the coolest community group on the internet, just go to Facebook, search Big Fat Positive Community, request to join, answer those two pesky membership questions so we know you're not a robot, and then you'll be sent straight through to our awesome community of like-minded folks.
If you love our show, please rate us and review us wherever you listen to podcasts and spread the word. Tell your friends, colleagues, family about Big Fat Positive. Our show is produced by Laura Bierick, Shauna Maiko, and Steve Yeager. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. Have a good week.
Bye.